Hey everybody, real quick before we get to today's episode, I just wanted to remind you all about Jupiter Jet Volume 2. It's by friends of the show, Jason Inman and Ashley Robinson. And I love Jupiter Jet. The Volume 1 was such a favorite of mine and my daughter, who at the time was 6 years old, and she loved it so much, and we really bonded over it. The first comic that she couldn't wait to read and you know, didn't want to put down, and she even was the first person ever to cosplay as Jupiter Jet and got to meet Jason and Ashley. So that was really cool. Jupiter Jet has a special place in my heart, as you can tell. And I've read the first 20 pages of Volume 2, and it has that same really all-ages wholesome feel. You know, the first volume had that classic pulp Rocketeer feel to it, maybe mixed with a little DC Superhero Girls. And the second volume is picking up right where that left off, maybe with the stakes raised a little bit, I'll say. And Jason and Ashley always throw a bunch of twists and turns that are a lot of fun as well. So there's a link to go and check out the article on LRM Online to read more details about the Kickstarter. And there's also a link to the Kickstarter itself, so you can go and support it. I highly recommend it. It's a great, fun, all-ages book. And if you have a young boy or girl, I think they'll enjoy it just as much as my daughter does. So thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Webtoon Wednesday episode, and today we're going to be talking about a strip that just got started. There's four episodes out so far as we record this. By the time it drops, there'll probably be a few more, but the strip is called Yuna and Kawa-chan, and I have the creator, Lauren Schmidt, joining me. Lauren, thanks for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you for having me. This is lovely.
Yeah, so we want to get into the strip. As I said, there's only a few episodes out, so we can't get too in detail. We don't want to spoil. Of course, we want everybody to be able to enjoy it. But there's a few questions and a few kind of general things that we can talk about and give our listeners an idea of what the strip is about. But before we get into that, I always like to kind of get the secret origin, if you will, of creators when they first come on the show. So what's your history and background with comics? Did you grow up reading them? Were they a part of your childhood?
Yeah, I mean, I got into, like, specifically I was very into DC Comics. Probably around when I was 11, I got into DC Comics and manga. And that became kind of a big thing. I think also because DC had a lot of good animated series at the time, it was really easy to just pick up, you know, going to the local comic book store and trying out some of the comics, because I didn't really grow up with it until then. And it was sort of word of mouth between friends. But I also got really into finding web comics on just like DeviantArt and just looking through, you know, the sidebar on everyone's website where they would have like their friend's web comic or a comic that they liked, and just saving everyone's link. So I would just have this giant folder, most of which I don't remember most of the comics I followed, but I really liked like Hark a Vagrant, Johnny Wander was a good one.
So it sounds like you always had a love for the medium. Did you know at a very early age that you wanted to create comics? Was that something that, was kind of always in your blood, so to speak?
I mean, I think beforehand I wanted to be like a children's novelist, specifically because I idolized J.K. Rowling when I was 8. I wanted to basically be her and write like this grand, you know, storyline for kids. So it switched over to drawing kind of in late elementary school. And kind of going into middle school, high school, I used to draw little comic strips for friends, but I never did anything super big project-wise. just kind of enjoyed and dabbled in it a little bit.
And did you go to school for art? Was that something that you wanted to make a career out of?
Yeah, I went to school at College for Creative Studies in Detroit for 2D animation, because I wanted to go into 2D animation. That's kind of what I do now. I freelance out in New York, and this is, I guess it's easier to do like a storyline with a comic. So I kind of have been dabbling in it, like smaller projects, and that was kind of where this comic started from.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, comics are really hard to break into. I think people don't realize how few like full-time comic creators are actually out, you know, out there in the world, you know, fewer than there are like NFL or players or Major League Baseball players. It's that exclusive. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of comic creators who'd love to write Batman, but one guy gets to write that Batman title every month. So it's really, it's a very competitive field. So I know a lot of creators kind of go into something similar or related to use their creative skills and then, you know, kind of do comics on the side, at least to start with. So it sounds like that's kind of the path that you you were on.
Yeah, a little bit like that. And also, comics are just a lot of work. There's just so much that goes into them. They seem really simple because it's like, oh, I can basically do this on my own, and that's what I do with this one. I kind of just work alone with a friend if they need to help me with something, but there's so much work that goes into making them. Not that animation doesn't take a lot of work either. It takes a lot of work.
Yeah, but usually it's a bigger team on an animated project as opposed to certainly on a...
You need help.
Yeah, exactly. When you're working on a webtoon strip, especially, you know, I think the majority of creators I've had on Webtoon Wednesday, they're doing it all. You know, they're writing the script. You know, they're planning out the story. They're writing the script. They're illustrating. They're inking. They're coloring. It's the whole nine yards. So it's definitely a daunting task, to be sure.
Yeah, and it's very different from like DC Comics and just like print comics in general that come out like monthly. I think that's why I always liked web comics, because you usually got like the creator's personality involved. It was just kind of cool to see what one person or a small team of people can do.
Yeah, it's definitely a collaborative process most of the time, and Webtoon, you know, notwithstanding. Well, why don't you give our listeners an idea of what the story is about that you currently have on Webtoon?
Yeah, it's a kind of story about two friends. So it is a friendship story about a teenage girl and a person in a mascot costume who doesn't speak, surviving together during the apocalypse in Japan. Kind of the easiest way. And as they try and figure out a way to get out of Japan.
Yeah, and give us a little bit about the main characters. Again, I know we haven't had a lot to draw on, but kind of give us your overview of the two main characters for the strip.
Yuna is a like high school senior who is she's very nice, very sweet, but kind of tries to get things done. And Kao-chan is, no one really knows. They don't speak, but they also seem really uncomfortable with taking the costume off. Yuna does not even know who they are, what they look like. So they just seem to kind of have clung together. And there's at least one other character right now who is kind of a little bit more antagonistic, but he just joined their group. And he's a little bit of like Yuna's, I guess, exact opposite, where she's very trusting and very optimistic that they're going to find hope. He's a little less optimistic and a little more self-serving, and his name is Junichiro.
Yeah, and he just
That's it for now.
He just showed up in the last episode. So, you mentioned Kao-chan. I mean, we don't even know if male, female. I mean, I'm kind of assuming kind of close to age. And Yuna, I mean, they seem to be wearing like a high school mascot costume. So, I'm assuming high school age, but I know that you may turn out to throw us a curveball on that. But
well, it could be different. I don't see it as like the school mascot. I think it's like a city ambassador. So this is a character that would have been like around her hometown. So it's also kind of a symbol of like normal times, I guess. Maybe that's sort of why Yuna's so easy to accept it, because it's this very fun kind of image to hold on to.
Wow. So it really could be anybody. That's so interesting.
Yeah. And to be honest, when I first started, this was a short story. It was only like the first 5 chapters of the original comic, which was all pink, and has been taken down since then. And it was just a short story, so I didn't really think that people would get so invested in finding out who Kawa-chan is, because I was going to end the story pretty early on. So it's become a very big interest of a lot of readers. And I should have known that was going to be the thing, because it's a mysterious identity. But I was not expecting everyone to get like so excited about like theories. And I've heard many fun theories in comments.
Wow, that's cool. So have you, like, knowing that this identity of Kawa-chan has kind of taken on a life of its own, have you revised anything? Have you fleshed it out more in your mind?
Yeah. I think some of the old readers are already starting to see there's some changes. Not, like, big changes, but I think I've fleshed out things, and people have mentioned, like, oh, this makes a little more sense now. Because I did have a full story after I wrote the first 5 chapters, but obviously back when I was first writing those 5, I kind of envisioned it as like a project that I could revisit. Like they would just kind of keep traveling and meeting new people and then like move on to the next place.
Gotcha.
So now it's got a fuller story. It kind of became a fuller story after the first 5 episodes.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. So, mm-hmm. Without spoiling, can you give us an idea? You mentioned post-apocalyptic. We've seen in the 4 episodes that have been released so far kind of these monstrous-looking creatures. Can you give us an idea, maybe not how it happened or whatever, but just sort of an idea of what's happened in the world to put them in this situation?
We will get into it definitely in the story, and I feels really bad because where we left off in the original, we had about 21 chapters, and I think we were about 4 or 5 chapters away from like getting the big reveal of what was going on. But basically no one really knows where they came from. They just suddenly appeared. And we'll see kind of different forms of them fairly soon, I think. It's so hard to tell because I'm so much further writing it right now than is what is out. I'm about 13 episodes ahead, but all we know is that there were earthquakes beforehand, and then one day they just showed up.
Got it. Now these creatures have...
Suddenly people have kind of been disappearing, and we don't really know why that is.
Gotcha. So now that you've...
I know, it's so early.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. But it's interesting. I think it's a really great beginning, and something you mentioned, kind of not necessarily making changes, but just, coming back to the story and sort of getting a chance to refine it. Are you finding that you're adding things and taking some things away, to kind of distill the story down?
I think like even in the 3rd episode, which is the flashback to her friends, like they have so many, like there's another flashback much later on where we meet them again. And I think once I had done the 2nd flashback, I had more of their personality. So it was a lot easier going back and rewriting the current episode 3 and just adding like the flavor of these characters. Cause that's kind of what we're going to do back and forth is, have like we kind of jumped right into the apocalypse, but we're gonna go back and forth to see what Yuna's life was like back then and kind of different aspects of where they were before chapter 1.
And I know
between like her and Kawa-chan and her and her friends and family.
And had you done that in the first iteration as well?
Yeah, there's the way that I wrote it before was it was almost like a print comic. So there was about a 40-page comic that would be like each book. There was, we were in book 5, and each book had a flashback.
Got it.
So there were about five flashbacks that kind of tied into what was going on.
Now, you mentioned that you've had some people that were readers from before that have that are still following along, and they've noticed a few of the differences. I'm sure that, you know, you're doing what's best in service of the story if you're, you know, changing anything or tweaking anything. But it must be an added benefit that they're getting to see kind of a better director's cut, if you will, version of the story. So are a lot of the readers that have been with you a long time, are they really enjoying this new version of the story?
Yeah, I'm really glad that they are, because a big thing with the, like, not even in the writing, the old style was this like white with pink line, and there was like no color because I was doing this comic for free in between freelance jobs. So I was like, we're gonna just slap some pink down. It was kind of a cool look, but it was definitely made so that I could produce it faster, and people really liked the old style. So when I said that the new comic was going to be full color, some people were not really sure about what it was going to look like, or how they would feel about it. And a lot of people have been really accepting of the new look, which is really nice. I'm very happy with that. And I think people are enjoying the characters again. We'll see like how they enjoy the story going on, because Junichiro is definitely a character that people do not like, and they're already preparing for hating him, which is very funny to read.
What were some of your...
He's kind of written that way.
Yeah, I totally... It comes across right away, which is okay. I mean, you need that sometimes. You know, there's those characters that...
Need an antagonistic, not a villain per se, but an antagonist.
Yeah, those characters that you love to hate, so to speak. What were some of your inspirations for the idea originally?
So there is a mascot, a real life mascot that I think a lot of people probably know. He's been on like, this character has been on like John Oliver. It's Cheetan the Otter. And I saw a video of it a little before I created the character, of this otter character with a bat stomping around a room to like smash a watermelon and just falling over. And I laughed so hard, I cried, and I thought, oh, that's so fun. I'm going to like make my own like mascot with a bat character. So I drew Yuna and Kawa-chan with no names, no idea of making a story. And during that time, I was kind of in a rut, I guess. I had a lot of jobs at the time that were just very, just tiring. I was getting really fed up with a lot of things, and I wanted to make something that was my own thing. So I thought, I've got these two characters. This would be fun to do a short story. I don't love the post-apocalyptic like genre, so I guess I wanted to write a story that was a little bit different than like the pessimistic, gray, you know, just ultra-violent post-apocalyptic. It's very centered around love and friendship and kind of the hopeful optimism that things are going to be okay. So that was kind of the main gist of those.
And when you came out with the strip originally, did it take off right away, or did it take a little while to build the following?
No, it definitely took a little bit of time. But we people saw it, and I had a few readers early on, and then I think they have. It used to be the Discover page. Now it's Canvas, but they put it on the Discover page once. Mm-hmm. And that got a lot more viewers. And then it got put on the front page on a banner one time, and that upped the views. So it really was kind of a snowball effect of different things.
And then when it moved over to the featured side, you already had somewhat of a built-in audience. Was that like much more of a good response when it sort of relaunched?
Yeah, but people had to wait a long time. I was working at Titmouse, the studio, for a Nick Jr. show, and I was full time for like 8 months when I got the email that they wanted to, you know, green light it as a webtoon. So they were wonderful with me and giving me a lot of time to like set it up during me working a full time job. So I worked two jobs at once, And I think people are so, like, they waited so long that I once read a comment recently that was, I've been with this story for 3 years, and like, it's not even 2 years old. I think it feels like 3 years, though. People have been very patient and just very supportive of the wait.
Oh, that's funny. I've been reading it for 3 years, but it's only been out for two.
It'll be 2 years old. The conception of it will be 2 years old in March, and it'll be officially two in next May.
Gotcha.
So it's not 3 years old.
So my next question, so this is interesting because you mentioned before when it was in its initial iteration, you were pretty close to the big reveal of you know, what exactly is going on in the story. And now, you know, we've rewound, we're telling the story again, full color, a little tweaked. And so you're a lot further away from that big reveal. So is there anything that has you excited for the readers to either experience again, or if they're new to the strip, experience for the first time, that's coming up, that's any closer than that big reveal that's down the line, so to speak?
I mean, there's some chapters kind of coming up that are very exciting, that are from like the first five chapters. Cause I feel like those were, cause that was my original short story, so those were very strong. And I think I really like enhanced it in a way. I feel proud of them. And also, I just think the art, I'm a very big critic of my own stuff. So I am looking at some of these chapters that are coming out and like, ooh, that was drawn like half or over a half a year ago. I don't like the art as much anymore. I definitely get into a stronger style, I think, going in. I think I draw things a little better. So I'm just excited that the art looks a little nicer to me, but I think that's just me. But there's a few, I think, exciting chapters in the next few weeks that I'm very excited to get to.
Well, I mean, as an artist, you always want to continue to get better and to challenge yourself. And from that, you know, initial idea of, hey, I want to draw, you know, a mascot with a bat, you know, nail studded bat. And now we've got, you know, an Asian girl with the nail studded bat. We've got this this mascot with such. So when you were designing the world, you know, like you said, you came up with those characters first. How did you flesh out the world around them? Did you want to go, hey, I want to keep it kind of light in tone, but at the same time, it's a post-apocalyptic story, so it needs to have like a sense of danger, foreboding. Like, what was your thought process when you started to flesh out the world that these characters inhabit?
I mean, style-wise, the original was, like I said, it was all pink. I kind of wanted this, like, super cute, kind of cute look, but the lines are kind of inky, and it looks a little messed up, and it. I think a lot of people, even starting the original series, thought it was going to be a comedy, and then were like, whoa, I was not expecting the tone of this. I really liked the vibe of that, so when we switched to color, First, I did fight briefly of like, hey, the pink is kind of a real big part of the tone of this. Can we keep it? They said, no. You know, people gravitate more to full color. So I said, okay, we're going to make it ultra, like, super bright. I wanted pink in, like, every palette. So there's at least some variation of pink in, like, whatever scene. And really playing up with, like, bright colors instead of just that, like, gray apocalyptic look that just maybe the only bright color is a red. Really wanted to up the color palettes and kind of play around with bright color being used in different types of emotion. And also, I've never been to Japan, so I did Google map some rural, like, southern Japanese cities just to get a feel for things, because I've never been there. And I think in the original comic, things looked a little New York-y in some areas. Gotcha. So I'm trying to get better at that.
Now, do you, when you take us through your workflow for creating an episode, you must have a big outline for the story. Do you then create a script for yourself, or do you just thumbnail and then go into the illustrations and then add the dialogue? Like, what's your process?
I do I try and keep it a 5-day workload. So Monday I will do thumbnails and script, and I will draw the thumbnails and the script at the same time, or I will just thumbnail everything with like a script in mind, and then I'll go in after and then type it all up, send it to my editor, And then Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I just ink all the inking, usually like half of them on Tuesday, half of them on Wednesday. Thursday is coloring all of the characters or finishing up any line art that I wasn't able to get on Wednesday. And then Friday is usually background line or background color, word bubbles, finishing up, cleaning everything. And then hopefully I get it done on Friday and can have my weekend. But sometimes I work a little bit on the like Saturday if I can't get everything done, or if it's like a beefy chapter and it just needs more work.
Now, have you been able to work ahead a little bit? I mean, like you said, we have four strips that we've seen so far. What number are you currently working on?
Right now I'm working on 19, but I've been working on it since May. We tried to get at least 12 done before we even thought about launching. And then during that time I was still working. So at this point we're a good 13 episodes ahead, which is very nice.
Yeah. It's nice to have that cushion. I have a feeling it'll be gone before you know it. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of the weekly.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, we're keeping steady. It's got a steady workload.
Cool. Well, good luck with that. I'm always amazed when, you know, it's one creator who's doing everything. It just boggles the mind so much. Work. We mentioned how the strip ended up on Webtoon, right? Did we?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yes, we did.
A little bit, yeah. Because there was a contest that year when I put it on Webtoon. I wasn't entirely planning on putting it on Webtoon. But I was about 3 episodes in, give or take, and saw that there was a contest. And then I broke it up for the scrolling format, which wasn't amazing. It looked a little messed up, but I kind of justified it as, hey, you're getting a free comic. I'm not getting paid to do this. This is just a passion project. Now I can, you know, plan ahead because I know how to do it now.
Yeah, but tell us about getting that offer to move over to the feature side, though. What was that like?
It was very exciting. I was just kind of busy with work. I had told kind of everybody, hey, I'm going to be working at Titmouse for about 8 months, so I'm going to still work on the comic, but I'm going to do it very slowly. That's what I used to do. Was about, I'd put about like 5 chapters and then I'd take a month off to keep working, and then I'd put another 5 out and then take a month off. I was like, we're gonna have to take a little more time. And while I was getting ready for the next batch of 5 chapters, I got the email. I stopped production to kind of deal with like them asking me questions, me asking them questions. I created some coloring tests for them, and they pitched it, and I found out through my now editor Annie that we got it green light. So I was allowed to tell everybody, and it was exciting but scary because I was very worried about how much work it was going to be on top of like working on a kid's show, and it was a lot at first.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
Yeah, no rest for the weary here. So you mentioned when you first put it on the Canvas side, having a little bit of trouble with the formatting for the vertical scroll. It wasn't originally created for that. Now that you've been working on the Webtoon platforms for a while and creating specifically for that, what are your thoughts on the vertical scroll now? How is it to work with?
I like it. I think it's really nice. I do really like the page print layout. Like a really well-designed comic page is just, it's beautiful. But I really liked how easy it is to read vertical scroll and how easy it is to access these kind of comics. So it's fun. And I thought it would be a lot harder to work on, but it's not been as bad as I thought. I thought my computer would be chugging on these files, and they have been doing okay.
Have you created a panel, or have you done something in a particular episode where you've taken advantage of the vertical scroll in a way that you couldn't, you know, draw on a panel or transition or pacing or something to, of that nature that you wouldn't be able to do on a traditional comic page where you you saw what you did and went, okay, nah, I couldn't have done that on a regular comic. This is really cool. I think I got it yet. Have you had that moment yet?
I like long background transitions. I think that's kind of the nicest thing. I still kind of stick to like panel boxes. I really like when you get to switch from, even in other people's comics, when you switch from one place to another and you just kind of like open up to a really like long, beautiful length. The only thing I think I struggle with is Kawa-chan has a big head
yeah.
and Yuna does not. So sometimes sticking them on that format is a little hard. You gotta really either crop out a little bit of Kawa-chan's head or just really stick them close. That's the only thing I think I've had issues with the vertical scroll, and that's entirely by my own design.
All right, I'll have to be on the lookout for some of those long
backgrounds. I think I handle it well, but it can be frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, despite its challenges, and I think the vertical scroll is the one thing that aspiring creators sort of have to get used to. But once you do, there are interesting things you can do with it, like we were saying. But do you think Webtoon is a good platform for creators who are looking to, you know, to get their work out there to show that they can put together a good comic?
Yeah, I mean, I put it also on Tapas, which Tapas was great. I like the analytics better on that one, but Webtoon has a very big fan base. They've got a lot of readers who are mostly, I haven't seen too many mean people on Webtoon, but mostly people are very enthusiastic and excitable, and that's awesome. Like, it's got a great energy. And I mean, my comic did grow from getting put on like front page stuff or the Discover page, and that was, you know, Webtoon kind of promoting good work, and I've seen a lot of really awesome work from other people through them doing that. So I really enjoyed working with Webtoon even before working on it. It's very simple to upload. It's nice, and they got ad sharing, which is nice too.
Yeah, there's multiple ways to monetize, even if you're on the Canvas side, even if you're not on the featured side.
Yeah.
There's ways to make money. Yeah, we've had several people that work directly for Webtoon that have come on to talk mm-hmm. about that in the past. So, and you mentioned how great the fans are. Are there any particular fan interactions you've had since you've moved over to the feature side that kind of stand out in your mind so far? I mean, it's only four strips, I know, but
I mean, just the fact that people like stuck around during the length of the wait that they had to wait between the beginning of May to January, people really like stuck around. And some people would be like, oh, I dropped this comic a long time ago, I just forgot about it, and I just found that it was featured, and they come back and they, you know, they've been really warm and welcoming, and it's sweet. I don't know if I've had any specific like one-on-one. I don't know how I think before when I was on Discover, I would comment and respond to comments a lot, and I'd joke around. I don't know how I'm supposed to conduct myself now that I'm like a, you know, paid creator. So I have not interacted as much on Webtoon, but I just drew a little doodle of Kawa-chan hugging Yuna on Instagram to thank people for being so cool these like first 2 weeks. It's very nice. People have been very sweet.
Yeah, I think you'll find that it's pretty much the same, even though you're on the featured side. I will say this though, in warning, a lot of creators have told me it's like it's sort of a double-edged sword. When you're on Canvas and the spotlight's a little smaller, you can kind of read and respond to every single comment if you want. But once you get on the featured side, and it's great to be successful, but when you start getting, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of comments per episode, you can do one of two things. You can either respond to all the comments, or you can make your next episode. You don't really have time.
Yeah. I mean, just because it's new, I've been reading a lot of comments because, you know, it was launch week two
right.
weeks ago. So I was like, okay, I was obsessively like, what's going on? And I had friends sending me like, yep. Look at this one. Trying not to do that as much, but, you know, it was new and fresh and fun.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And it's not that anybody takes it for granted. It's just there's only so many hours in the day. And
oh, yeah.
You're going to start reading the comments of, hey, where's the next episode?
Oh, of course. Well, people were like, this should, you know, come out 2 a week. And I'm like, there's no way.
Yep.
There's no way I can draw that fast.
I know. I can't remember who it was.
That's nice.
I had some, it might have been Urachan, who was doing 3 a week when she started and then went down to 2 and is now down to 1. She's like, literally my body was like breaking down. Like I couldn't do it anymore. It's like, oh my God.
And I work in animation, so I think I know like a bad deadline, and I've worked some bad deadlines where you work super hard. And I think I'm trying very hard to not get myself in that place from the beginning because I know how it can feel.
Yep.
So I think I've got a good track, but I do work pretty long hours, like 3 of the days that I work, because line art and character flat can take hours. But I've been trying to like take my weekends for me, which is great. Going for a walk, because it's New York and obviously it's easy to walk around everywhere. I'm going to try and like take myself out to coffee shops so I can like get out of the house because I have a very tiny room. So I need a change of scenery. Other than that, though, I'm trying very hard to like take care of myself for this process. It's a lot of work.
That's good to start from the beginning. Don't wait till you're already tired and then try to recover. Do it right from the start. You definitely have your head in the right place. Well, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to see where the strip goes. You know, we're early days here, but it's a very interesting start. Obviously, I didn't read the original version, so I'm probably not in the same place with some of your other readers who were like, oh, we're so close to the big reveal. But I
don't read the comments. People have been spoiling.
Good to know. Good to know. So, but as we finish up here, Lauren, I wanted to give you the floor. If there's anything you want to say to either new listeners who are discovering and hearing about your strip for the first time, or longtime readers and fans, we'll give you the chance here if there's anything else you want to add.
I'm very happy that people like made the switch over to feature. Very, very thankful that people have been so nice. And if you are a creator, I guess like if you have the time and energy, because obviously you have to take care of yourself, but if you have the time and energy, start your projects, because I started this off as a very small exercise. Kawa-chan was just a writing challenge to write a character that can't talk. And it kind of turned into something else. It became a very fun passion project. So, you know, start with small projects, see where it takes you.
All right.
And take care of yourself if you are a creator.
Yep. There you have it. So, well, again, thanks for joining me, Lauren. If there's anyone who wants to follow along online with your work, ask questions, are you pretty active on social media? Is there a certain spot where they should look for you?
I'm most active on Instagram. It's lowercase L Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T 92, L Schmidt 92. I don't always post a ton of stuff from the comic. I'm trying to, because now I'm getting into it, you'll probably see more. I do a lot of American Girl fan art, so I'm sorry for that. but that's my stress-free thing to draw. But I am most common checking that out. I am on Twitter. I barely check it. I don't even have it linked in my comic because I don't even like Twitter. And I have a Facebook page. It's Art of Lauren Schmidt.
Gotcha. So, well, I'll put a link to the Facebook page and Instagram in the show notes, everybody. So you can go there and give Lauren a follow. Again, thanks for joining me and best of luck with the strip.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is lovely.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource,
Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.